pals of mine. I'm Julie Parker, and this is Conversation Accessories. It's so lovely when events take place in historic neighborhoods, such as the recent second annual Sacramento Black Book Fair, which was held in 8 venues in historic Oak Park. I have a photo of my grandmother taken there sometime in the 1920s. She and a girlfriend are doing the Charleston at the top of a slide. The Sacramento Black Book Fair celebrated heritage, ancestry, culture, and stressed the importance of education. The themes this year? Reading, A Path to Freedom, 50th anniversary of the Voting Rights Act, and the Black Arts Movement and Why Sacramento. There were book discussions, poetry readings, publishers, and children's activities which extended beyond face painting. The Kids Zone was hosted by the Brick House Gallery and Art Complex, a gallery off the grid, which are the best kind. There were games, storytelling, music, books, of course, poetry, and African drumming provided by Jodama Drum and Dance.
Actually, this whole thing started about through a very dear friend of ours, Ms. Liello Hickman, who's no longer with us. We started having a church potluck, and we were Black History Month in February, and so we only had 3 forms of entertainment, a poetry reading, a gospel song, and African drum and dance, which was originated by her daughter, Leah Bradley Green, now. And from there, we just kind of took it and ran from doing it in the living room to now we're all over California. So it's just kind of like of a grassroots type of organization that's more family-oriented than anything. We're not like we go out there and recruit or hold auditions. It's more family-oriented. And
what kind of feedback have you been getting from it?
Oh, we've been getting a lot of feedback. We've been performing all throughout the state of California. We've been at the state fair for the past 6 years, Sacramento County Fair. We've been a little bit of everything. People are loving it, and one of our mottos is Sacramento's best kept little secret. And so we're finding that wherever we go and perform, people don't know about it. You know, they said, wow, you know, African drum and dance, that's different. And so we've been getting a lot of positive feedback. A lot of positive feedback.
I can't imagine how you could not.
Yeah, we perform at a lot of schools. A lot of elementary schools love us, and especially during their cultural days and cultural months that they have, the kids love it. You know, because we find it in Sacramento. There's when it comes to a cultural, we don't have a lot of good representation of the African American culture, and it's mostly with basketball or rap or something of that degree. And we want to give them something to show them where their roots kind of stem from, which is back in Africa. Yeah, so
and true history.
True history, absolutely true history, and we want. We use the drums, the different cowbells, the different shimmy shakers to show them that what can be done with various instruments that are really simple, you know. So people like it. They think it's really unique. We have a stick dance that we have where you use just 2 sticks, and the kids love it. They go crazy because all you're using is 2 sticks, and it makes the most unique sound when we put it together with the drums. So
which they can do anywhere. That's
anywhere, anywhere, and anytime.
And it costs nothing.
Costs nothing. 2 sticks, you can go get 2 twigs out of a tree, shave them, and bang them together, you know, and so on. It's
free joy.
Free joy, absolutely. I like that. Free joy.
Okay, my name is Sharon Saffold, and I'm the president of the Sacramento affiliate of the Black Child Development Institute, and we are a co-sponsor of the Kids Zone. And so Faye Kennedy contacted our organization to ask us to partner with them on doing the Kids Zone portion of this. And we were excited because it's in line with our mission, which is making sure that our children are educated from zero all the way until they're dead. And so we were excited about becoming a partner in this event.
So how do you even know where to start besides the music? Of course. I was going to say of course, but it really is. You have to. Music is food, isn't it?
Yes, it is. Music is food, and music is a way of communicating, and literacy is a way of communicating. So we start there, and then we look at what are the things would be fun for the children, but would have an emphasis on literacy and educating and reading.
That was going to be my next question, insofar as the literacy aspect is concerned. We're having readings as well.
Correct. So we have storytelling. Storytellers come. We have authors who come and read their stories to the children, and we have people who just do storytelling. And so that's always exciting. The children are very excited about being part of the storytelling event.
My parents, I was lucky enough that my dad read to me.
Yes.
He made it really interesting. Really
yes.
Into all the parts and characters.
Yes.
And so I naturally became an avid reader.
Yes.
And I'm hoping that these events, this event, encourages parents to do the same for their children so they can pass that on.
And we know parents are our kids' first educators. And so this event is one where we encourage parents to be as active as the children are. And so they're part of the storytelling process. They pick out books for their children and they read to them. Also, we have a storytelling tent where a parent could just pick up a book and read to the children. And so we encourage them to participate. The children today will be making their own book, which the children can, parents can read to them, or they can read it to the parent.
Nice.
So that is the key. The parents have to create the environment, just like yours did, to encourage reading as a lifelong skill.
Yeah, just because you can't plug it into the wall doesn't mean it's not interesting.
That is and reading is so much more fun because you can use your imagination.
Which is why movies sometimes don't quite make it, because it doesn't match the book.
Correct.
A lot of people are disappointed. What books do you remember when you were a kid that really made an impact, that you still remember to this day?
You know what? For me, it was really Dr. Seuss. I like the rhyming books. I like the books that just kind of flowed in a pattern like that. And I even read those to my children because I loved them so much.
And the illustrations were not culture specific.
Correct.
A truly unique.
Way of telling a story that I really enjoyed. And it helps kids to learn the pattern of how to read, you know, that rhyming pattern and that fun pattern, and that reading can be fun.
Sacramento Area Youth Speaks, or SES, is a division of student affairs at UC Davis. Laura Cook explains their goals.
We have seasonal annual slams, spoken word, for the students to hone their skills in exercising their own voice. And this year we're going to BMV, which is Brave New Voices, an international slam where they get to meet people from New York, Guam, Africa. It's a really amazing networking opportunity for the young people to meet other people like themselves. And our youth will be here shortly to do a little bit of something for those who are attending today's Black Book Fair.
Well, since they aren't here yet, can you give me a little clue?
Oh, gee. Let's see. I can give you some of mine. I can't give you their voice, but let's see. A little spoken word would be, what is it you hope to get? Is that what you aim to give? Is that how you walk and strive to live? If your paycheck was based on how much love you live to survive, would you be forced to find another gig? If folks gave birth according to the good they did, would there be any kids? If the breaths that we were allowed to take were determined by how much healing we perpetuate, would we even be?
Shauna McDaniels from the Sojourn Truth Museum hosted the I Like Me Books craft table.
What you got here? Looks like an arts and crafts table.
It is, and this is the I Like Me table. They get to make an I Like Me book. And as you can see here, they get to actually draw the eye and word like, and they can come up with four things that they like about themselves, okay, or their culture, or just anything, you know. So this book says, I like Swahili. Hubo means love, and then we have have hearts here to represent love in the gift bag.
A little gift bag in between the pages.
Exactly. Okay. And then the next page is I Like Africa. We have another example. They can say I like culture. They get to draw a mask and they get to make a bracelet. Okay. But again, at this stage, they can draw anything that they would like to draw to represent anything that they like. You know, one young lady said, I like cats, and she drew a cat. Or I like trees, and she drew a tree. So this is just an example book. And the last one is I Like Me, and they get to draw themselves, okay? And I like my skin, eyes, nose, lips, and hair. They are beautiful, okay? And they get to
two hole punch on the side, and then you tie it with a ribbon.
Ribbon,
and it's done.
And boom. It's done. And they have their book.
That's a very cute idea.
Yes.
And adults should have that.
Yes, the kids.
Girl parties.
There you go. I love that idea. Okay.
How many low self-esteem women do we know?
Exactly. This would be perfect for that. Okay.
That's what I'm thinking.
I love that. And I think I'm going to do something like that with the women in the community, the young women in the community. I love it. And the kids that have been coming so far, they're having a wonderful time.
Well, how could they not?
Yes.
Seriously.
Yes, yes. And so it's very important that the kids have the information, you know, to help build up their self-esteem and feel good about themselves. And I thought this book would be perfect to do just that.
Visual aid.
There you go.
With literacy.
There you go.
Perfect.
Yes.
Talk about the Sojourn Museum.
Yes. Well, Sojourn of Truth Museum is located in South Sacramento. It's a community-based museum, and we've been serving the community for the past 20 years in Sacramento. So we're based in South Sacramento, but we serve children in the entire Sacramento region. And basically, our focus is on art education and outreach and mentorship. And so we do music, performing arts, visual arts. We now have a health and wellness component. I said mentorship. And well, the mentorship is for the young boys and girls to come. And we have volunteers come and mentor them a variety of different workshops. First of all, helping them with their homework, getting that out the way, and then talking about issues that they're dealing with in school, at home, with their peers, and they talk about those issues and try to come up with positive solutions to help them and to guide them in a positive direction. So it's a very wonderful program. And we also have different cultural dances, dance classes that we have. We've had in the past salsa dance, hukilau dance, African dance. We have Brazilian capoeira dance. We now offer that on Friday nights, Saturday mornings. We do yoga. We do meditation. We try to make sure that we provide as many opportunities in the community to the children and the families as possible. And everything pretty much is free or very low cost, because we know the children and the families in the community can afford to, you know, receive art education. And if we were somewhere like in Granite Bay or Folsom or like that, you know, the same services, you know, families would have to pay like maybe $350, $400 per child for what we offer. And so we're really proud to say that we have this opportunity for children and families to come and experience art, because as you know, art has been taken out of the schools.
Wrong,
you know,
budget choices.
Yes, and our children, they need art. You know, they need to be able to,
besides the brain.
Yes.
They need to be
stimulated and value and appreciate art, you know. And
sometimes not everybody can articulate in written form.
Exactly. So to come and to be able to have a place to express themselves is just makes you feel really good, you know.
Like, so, hello, I'm here.
I'm here. Come on over. Okay. Yes.
Read Across Jamaica Foundation is a literacy organization, and what we do is we collect new and used children's books, and we do book drives, mission trips, and local community activities here in the United States. But our mission trips to Jamaica occur twice a year in May during Education Week, for 10 days, and in November during around the time of Veterans Holiday, so it's usually like the 11th through the 14th of November, that we go down and we do some parenting workshops. We go into the schools and read with the kids. We actually model our project objectives off of the LVEAP program, which is the it deals with social values, so the Living Values Education Program, LVEAP. And those social values include responsibility, unity, peace, love, happiness, simplicity. There's about 12 of them. And so we focus on those particular social values and pull each of those values out of the stories that we read to the kids, so that there's some interaction addressing, you know, some of the activities that are or things that are happening in the story, and have the children, you know, discuss those social values and how they would handle it or change the situation or things like that. Yeah. So basically that's what we do. And then, so we're right now in the process of recruiting, but some of these pictures that I have here are from our trip last year, in which we went into 11 different schools all across the island of Jamaica. And we took down books. We did, had some teacher resources as well. Engaged the children in the additional activities. There was face painting. We had drummers, some African drummers that came. We had poets that came. We actually had a poetry competition last year in Kingston, and that was, we had a great turnout for that. So, you know, we're really engaging the kids in a lot of literacy activities outside of Jamaica. But this year, we actually purchased books from local Jamaican authors. So all of the books that I have on display today come from Jamaica, and they are Jamaican authors that have written these stories and illustrated these books. And so I actually shared a few of them here at the festival, at the Black Book Festival.
Well, I'll have a link on that. On my website, so people can, if they would like to buy some of the books that don't live locally, can do that.
Yes, they can. So our web address is Read Across Jamaica, READ Across Jamaica, spelled out, .com.
The Crocker Art Museum's Art Arc, parked in front of the Brick House Gallery, presented a special interactive exhibit for the event, Form and Function, African and Azmat Art.
I love the idea that you're bringing the art to people.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, the Art Arc travels around to different elementary schools and different events in the community all throughout the year. We bring in classes at the elementary schools for an hour each class and give them a lesson about the different themes, and then we have lots of activities that go along with them.
So give me some example of the activities you have in this one. We can hear the drum.
Sure, yeah. So the theme now is African and Azmat art. So we have different activities that come from different areas of West Africa, like Adinkra symbols, so the kids can draw their own symbols. There's weaving. So they can learn how to weave as if you're weaving a kente cloth. And there's Adinkra stamping as well, so that's a big popular one.
So what are we looking at as we walk around?
Lots of African masks, and we can talk to the kids about what they're used for, what they're made out of. We also have some beaded hats and helmets, lots of just different kind of cultural objects.
What seems to be the most popular as far as kids stopping and their jaws dropping?
Let's see. They love this helmet up here.
It looks like a Dr. Seuss?
A little bit, yeah. It has lots of different materials, like the cheetah fur, so they're always kind of shocked to see fur on the mask. And then the activities, they love the drums and being able to play along. We have a video back there so they can dance and play along to some West African drumming. And we also have a New Guinea jungle room, and so they get kind of mesmerized if they feel like they're in a little jungle. And there's some mystery touch boxes back there, so they can reach their hand in and then draw what they're feeling. So they always get kind of excited about that.
God, as an adult, that'd make me a little
nervous. I know. Nothing bites, nothing scratches, nothing like that.
I think it goes back to those Halloween parties.
Yeah, yeah. Oh, yeah, definitely.
They tell you it's eyeballs. It's really not.
Mm-hmm.
You know,
it's like
spaghetti.
Right. No, not this one.
I bet that would be a lot of fun.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Feel free to go back there and play around.
So I love this idea. So you said you go to different schools.
Mm-hmm.
do you go to, say, senior communities or senior homes that maybe?
It's mostly...
mostly children? Or
yeah, mostly younger kids. But, you know, when we're at community events like this, we get people of all ages. So they all seem to kind of enjoy it.
I think it's a fabulous thing.
Yeah, yeah.
So I'm assuming you switch these out every once in a while, different themes?
Every 3 years, we switch out the theme. So this summer, we'll be rebuilding it. And in the fall, we'll be debuting our color art arc. So we'll have color and science and nature and color theory and art.
So how did parents feel about the Kids Zone and the event in general? Well, this young father articulated its importance.
I believe that as an African-American male, it's something that our kids need to understand where they come from, just to get a bit of culture in regards to our history and the music that originated from where we come from. And it's also something that having a black book fair, it's not a lot of things that we have access to in several areas just throughout the city in general. And again, as an African-American male and African-American children, it's something that I will continue to bring my kids to day and years to come in the future, and hopefully that they'll do the same thing for their kids as well. We do read to our son, and we will start reading to our daughter as well before bedtime. And the more books we have, the more easier it will be for us to have options for him to choose from.
Options are good.
Yes, they are.
And now a few authors to share their books with you. I attended the Friday evening activities, which was hosted by Underground Books. As you'll hear, the conversation with the second author was almost drowned out as more people piled into the store, resulting in a rise in volume. I had to guide the subsequent authors toward the back of the store for a little bit quieter recordings.
My name is Nicholas Powers, and the name of the book is The Ground Below Zero, From 9/11 to Burning Man, Darfur to Haiti, and Occupy Wall Street. And what it is a collection of both reportage as well as personal memoir intertwined over the arc of the past 10 years, really the first 10 years of the new millennium.
Well, what are you focusing on? What is your stabilizing force of the narrative?
I think structured on the Orpheus myth. And the Orpheus myth is, you know, the lover who loses his wife and goes down into Hades to try to retrieve her. And for me, the lover was going to basically crisis zones and meeting people, doing a lot of work, sometimes offering food supplies and relief supplies, sometimes reporting and meeting people who I wind up caring for very deeply. But once I left the zones, there was nothing really I could do for them. And so kind of having like a movie going on in the back of my head, and how to reconcile these two worlds. One, a very privileged life that I was living in Brooklyn, New York, which I still live, and also being deeply connected to people who are trapped in either poverty or war zones or recovering from natural disasters or basically the global South. And so how does one reconcile those two?
Will you be able to come up with a simple solution? I seriously doubt it, but I'm going to ask the question anyway.
Probably the one that people have been trying to for a couple thousand years, love.
Yeah. And, of course, each situation is unique to that person and what they're dealing with. And one size does not fit all. Just try to find some commonality that you can start with.
Yeah. When someone uses the word love, obviously it can be kind of seen as a kind of sappy, sentimental, romantic. But I think if you try to approach people who are in a crisis, people who are very different from you, with that general intention, that openness, then that's when you do the detailed work of actually finding the translation, finding what the power dynamics are, asking what the history is. And you're doing that from a very open space, which allows you to not feel judgmental or not to feel judged. And then that way kind of opens up the spirit to actually some political work.
It's compassion.
Yeah. Yeah.
Some people are uncomfortable with the word love.
Yeah.
Because I think your flower power is something goofy. But if you say compassion, they get it.
Yeah.
They might not be one of those, but they understand what you're
doing. Even at the risk of people dismissing it as flower power, I mean, if love was good enough for Gandhi, if it was good enough for Martin Luther King,
or Tolstoy. Hey, you're preaching to the choir here.
Yeah, so there you go.
But I understand semantics.
Yeah, yeah.
Just because social media and the buzzwords overkill, and so fortunately.
Yeah.
Well, that's great. Thank you.
Thank you, Julie. Thank you.
My name is Cedric Boyd. The book is The Good Wolf. It's about a gentleman that looks really good on paper. He's got money, he's got ladies, he's got a nice job, but he's still not happy because there's something missing. And through the book, we find out what's missing. We believe it's purpose. You can have all that stuff, and if you don't have purpose, it's kind of worthless, it's meaningless. So he goes through these struggles, and eventually he gets a handle on what his purpose is. And I actually wrote the sequel because the first one kind of left some questions unanswered, and the people that read it really wanted me to write a sequel. So
give the people what they want.
Give them what they want, you know, and they loved both of them and started to do really well. And actually, Plachette featured me in The Hub. I had an article in The Hub, and I got some good response from that. And I just recently did a radio show on 97.5 KDE, and Leon interviewed me, and that went really well. That's getting a good response. So things are really starting to pick up.
Good. Is this book based on personal experience or
observation? A lot of it's personal. I would say what inspired me was my mother wrote a book about how she met my father, and it was called Sex Out of Wedlock, and it got a really good response, and I kind of ghost wrote it with her, and I said, well, let me give it a shot and see what I can do, and it inspired me to write, because I think I've always been a writer, but I never really applied it, but working on my mom's book kind of opened the door again for me. And my father passed away in 2011, and me and him were really close. I mean, we were very, very close. He was a great dad, but not such a great husband, you know? So I kind of looked at his life. Yeah, yeah, yeah. So I kind of looked at his life, and I was like, if there's anything I can do through art, through my work, to kind of maybe shine a light on this kind of stuff, then maybe help the situation, then that's what I'm going to do. And that was really the inspiration for the book.
Maybe others who have a similar situation can talk it out.
And can relate. Yeah, yeah.
It's How did you deal with this?
Yeah, yeah. It's getting a lot of my friends thought they were my lead character. You know, they really did. And I said, you are. Because we all are. We all behave that way. You know what I mean? And eventually what happens is you end up, you know, alone, been married two or three times, died at old folks' home alone, you know, and your kids love you in spite of you instead of because of you. You know what I mean? So I see this pattern is consistent. Black, white, Hispanic, it doesn't matter. I see the same kind of pattern.
Well,
exactly. And I see these men with all these regrets. And they're on their deathbed, and I thought, wow, why do we keep doing this? You know what I mean? Why? And the thing about The Good Wolf is it's very sexual, it's very appealing. I had to make it very appealing because people wouldn't do it if it didn't feel good. So I got some feedback from a few people like, well, why is the language, and why is it so sexual, and why is it... And the answer was because it had to be.
Honesty.
Right. It had to be like that because people wouldn't keep doing it, you know. I mean, the appeal of drugs is that it must feel good. Well, they wouldn't do it. You wouldn't lose your house, your job, your teeth, and everything else behind it, right? If it didn't feel good, well, in this particular situation with The Good Wolf, you're probably not going to lose your teeth and your house, but you're going to lose everything that's important to you, which is your family, your friends, your children, your legacy, you know.
Step up and do something about it.
Absolutely.
I'm Kakwasi Somadi. Book is a novel, and the title is Coming Forth by Day. And in a nutshell, it's the protagonist discovers she's the victim of medical abuse, which transforms her personality from reclusive, introverted, to being an outspoken advocate for patients' rights and reform for medical subjects. She has a lover. She transforms him because he's a little bit on the shady side. And the book is about forgiveness, and it's about change, and it's about how to know when to hang on to secrets and when to let them go, because part of her problem, not to say what the whole book is about, part of her problem is she didn't share with other people that she was in the research project. So she didn't get questions. She didn't get to question herself about it. She wanted to change so much into someone that attracted men to her, that she could get dates, she could attract a husband, she could have children. That was her motivation. That is what the book is about.
So what was your catalyst for?
The catalyst was, it's not about my aunt, but I had an aunt who's now deceased, who had severe rheumatoid arthritis and diabetes. and she became a research subject. She did not at any point feel abused. She felt that that research saved her life because she had no medical insurance. And this was back in the late 40s when she was diagnosed. And nobody had medical insurance, right? And I used her loyalty and devotion to that research project. She moved from back east out here and was adamant about her records following her because she was in a medical research project, and she would say it like that. So she was always grateful and thankful. On the other side, the family never knew when she was being experimented on or when they were helping her with something she needed help for, because she's a human being. So we never knew the difference, and I'm not sure that she did. I knew when I wrote it that I wanted a novel. I did not want to write about my aunt's life, but her tenacity and her perseverance was what struck me, and her absolute trust in the system is what struck me. So I did some research out there, and there's still today quite a bit of medical abuse, people who push that envelope for whatever reason. So we had, you know, the antagonist, one of the antagonists was a doctor who pushed that particular envelope.
So what's your background?
My background is I've always wanted to be a writer, but I was not encouraged to be that by my parents, who wanted to make sure I could support myself, right? So I went back to school late in life, in my 60s, to Goddard College and earned a second master's degree in creative writing, an MFA. And this novel was my master's thesis, and I continued to write on it after it was good enough to get me to graduation, but not good enough to get me to press. You know, those can be two different things. And so I worked on it some more, revised it some more, worked with some editors, and got it ready for publication. It was released in November 2014.
My name is Sandy Holman, and I have a few books. One is called Grandpa Is Everything Black Bad, which is my favorite book. And we all have a heritage, and Grandma says our hair has flair. And we have several others that are pending.
Okay, which one are you sharing today?
You know, I actually am sharing a book that's not out, but I also always reference back to the Grandpa's Everything Black Bad book, because we're also doing a documentary with that book called The Cost of Darkness, which is looking at how the color of your skin affects your opportunities in all our major institutions and kind of creates a compounded institutional impact that is insidious and difficult for people who have darker skin. And it's been that way for a long time, and it has a cost, generationally speaking, as far as hopelessness, opportunity, and people being able to survive and thrive in life. So I will be talking about that book again, Grandpa's Everything Black Bad, because still a lot of people don't know about that book, and the impact that it's had on children of every ethnicity has been profound. I get letters from all over the country and the world after people read that book.
But I also like that one of the themes for this weekend is the voting rights 50th anniversary.
Absolutely. I mean, most people don't realize that almost all the things that were gained during the civil rights era have been reversed or overturned or diminished. The Voting Rights Act is definitely one of those things. And I'm really, really sad that we seem to be taking major steps back when we still had so many steps to take forward that we needed to address. But right now, we're taking some pretty significant steps back, and people really need to be cued in as to what's going on. We all need to not distract ourselves and get down and pick an issue and really stand up and give it voice, because things are pretty perilous in a lot of situations and in a lot of circumstances.
Not everything in the past has remained there.
Exactly. Some of those things were hard fought for our ancestors. We're having a Juneteenth event next June 14th on Sunday from 1 to 5 in Davis. And it's really got me thinking about our ancestors who sacrificed so much, because it's the 150th year of the Emancipation Proclamation. Of course, Juneteenth celebrates when the slaves in Galveston, Texas found out almost 2 years or more later that that Emancipation Proclamation had been signed. And of course, it really didn't change a lot of people's lives, but symbolically it was significant and a powerful start as far as representing possibility. So I'm really, really reflective of things like the Voting Rights Act, the March on Washington, the 150-year signing of the Emancipation Proclamation, and what was sacrificed by so many people. We owe it to our ancestors to get involved, to read, find out what's going on, figure out how we can use our talents to make a difference, and to not just sit around hoping things are going to get better.
You have to tell me a little bit about Grandpa. What was his name?
His name was Rufus Homan. He was a longtime resident of a mosque here, actually. He lived on T Street in downtown Sacramento for, I don't know, over 40 years. He was a strong African-American male who broke every stereotype that people have about African-American males. He was my jester, which was passing down oral history and making sure that I knew where I came from and making sure that people understood that we came from greatness, that many of the things that others are given credit for actually came out of Africa. And so I had this rich, rich, wonderful history and foundation that gave me a sense of self from my grandfather. And that's why he's in every one of my books. So, you know, we have the three I mentioned, but we have Honor Your Elders coming out, Love is the Root of All People, I Can Achieve If We All Believe. He's in every one of them because I want him to be the teacher for the next generation so that they know that there were brilliant men of old who had a lot to offer, and we need to learn from our elders. He was amazing.
Here's to Grandpa.
Here's to Grandpa Rufus.
Considering this was only the second Sacramento Black Book Fair, its depth and expanse of community passion was impressive. If you'd like to learn more about the event and possibly follow its lead in your community, contact its leading force at BlueNilePress.com. Do something different. Enjoy a breakfast in your backyard.